This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hello and welcome back, Lucha Lushes, and we're here with another special edition of Get to Know the PTBN PWO Steel Cage Edition. We have a special guest today. Yeah, from the Steel Cage podcast, also from Minutes with the Mayor and the Dirty Sheets, we've got Derek Montilla. I'm sorry, I already messed it up. Derek Montilla.
Yeah. Hey, how's it going, man?
How are you doing?
Cue the steel cage lowering music.
Yeah. So, Derek, you are one of the main hosts. I don't know. It's for a while. It took me a long time listening to the Steel Cage podcast to even kind of like understand the dynamic of the hosts. So it's like it feels like it almost rotates hosts. Am I wrong there? You guys kind of, some people take the leads sometimes?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I think the best way to describe the Steel Cage is kind of how some of our listeners have, which is, you know, it's like listening to some buddies sit around and have a drunk conversation about, you know, wrestling and what their favorite stuff is. And, you know, that might be a bit of an oversimplification of it. But, yeah, we don't really have too much of a standard format, other than we just try to cover, you know, the weekly Raw update and you know, major happenings in wrestling overall. So it's a lot of fun, and we've been doing it for a while. I didn't start it. I was lucky enough to kind of come on board after I had been a listener myself, and that was like 3 years ago. And it's like I said, man, they fed a stray cat and I never went away.
Yeah, I guess you particularly have been around 3 years, and I know the podcast had been around, I guess, even longer than that. How long ago did the Steel Cage podcast, and I guess it's based on the website, correct?
Yeah, based out of the website. It started about 5 years ago, and it actually started as a like an audio project for a friend of theirs that was in college, and he needed to do something that they recorded and produced. So that's how the Steel Cage was born. They'd already been kicking the idea around for a while, but it kind of all came together when they needed to record this project for a friend of their school. So after that, the podcast lived on, and I believe one of my favorite stories is that one of the very first episodes was recorded on the same soundboard that Metallica recorded Black on.
Oh, whoa, that's kind of weird.
Yeah. Oh. for a ridiculous small podcast, it's the one amazing, like, you know, attachment to any kind of notable, you know, band or musical act in any way.
Yeah, I that's really actually kind of weird. Now, so my opening question is always supposed to be, are you now or have you ever been a member of the PWO board? I'm not even sure if you're familiar with PWO. Are you?
I am not.
Okay, so PWO is pro wrestling only. It's kind of the part of the internet where people talk about, like, what does it mean to have storytelling in wrestling? Or there was actually a post today from Parv, who's one of the other hosts of the podcast around here, talking about essentially something along those lines, saying how much of storytelling in wrestling is really there and how much of is it you telling the story to yourself and putting the pieces together. And it's kind of the think piece corner of the internet for pro wrestling fandom, the people who maybe we are a little bit too obsessed with wrestling. But what about...
Guilty.
Yeah, exactly. You host a wrestling podcast. You're obsessed with wrestling in some way. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts. What was your first exposure to, let's say, internet wrestling culture? What was the first kind of thing? I know for me, it was like we got that AOL disc, and I was in middle school, and the first thing I did was go to, you know, ECW.com. What was it for you? What was the first wrestling thing you did?
Well, I think it was like everybody, you know, once I found dirt sheet websites in general, I kind of became addicted to those, you know, that I felt ruined wrestling for me. And then I swore off of them completely, just because after a while I realized how bored I became with wrestling, knowing everything that was going to happen before it happened. And in some cases, obviously, it didn't always go that way, but it was one thing that I realized I knew too much. But I'll say one of my first experiences was with the Honky Tonk Man website. Honky Tonk Man had his forum, and he's an insane person. So I went on there, and I found myself just, you know, having ridiculous post and forum discussions, and a lot of people enjoyed my stuff. But the people that didn't enjoy my stuff were the moderators. So then I got kicked off. My username was Luthez, and then I came back as the ghost of Luthez, and I started to terrorize their website. And until I got bored with it, I just constantly made up new usernames and went on there and trolled it from that point on. But that was actually my first experience of, like, not understanding why, like, moderators kind of, you know, ran stuff however they wanted to. It's not like I was doing anything, you know, I wasn't breaking any rules or anything. They just didn't like the fact that I was going on and starting ridiculous discussions on forum posts, I guess. So whatever, I broke the rules. And so I had a lot of fun with that. And I quickly realized apparently that Honky Tonk Man himself, because they, like, sent me an email telling me that I was never allowed to come back on the website and all this stuff. Like, they got really super serious about it. But it for the most part, I think that was my first forum, you know, overall even forum experience was with the Honky Tonk Man websites. But yeah, I think like PW Mania and some of those websites that have been around for a long time, I just used to go to those religiously. And it's one of those things that I just didn't realize I was really ruining, you know, the story for myself, because then I would watch it and have zero interest in even watching the matches or anything, because I fully knew what was going to happen. And now I don't even like to speculate that hard on what's going to happen, because despite the fact that that's what we do and people like to hear that from us on the podcast, I'm still a fan of it. And I really just kind of like to sit back and let it happen and watch it play out. I think sometimes when we spend too much time kind of predicting what's going to happen and we're wrong, our own booking is better than the actual booking that takes place. So that's even more disappointing.
Or at least we're more committed to it. It's kind of like Vince Russo thought his booking was better than anybody else's, but, you know, it was still terrible. It's kind of
right,
when
right.
It's your baby and you thought of it, you think it's so great. So I totally get you. And it's funny how you kind of go through that period where your idea is, well, I'm going to find out as much as I can about the inside stuff. And as you said, going through dirt sheets and scoop sites and stuff. And then I think if you stick with it, some people have it ruined by that. If you stick with it, I think a lot of times you normalize back to kind of wanting to put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, right.
And essentially thinking, like, I wish I could not know. But you mentioned that you were Luthez on the Honky Tonk board there.
Yes.
Now, there's the legend. I wasn't there at the time because I just wasn't on the website. But that Luthez posted on Pro Wrestling Classics board all the way until, you know, his, you know, late age when he was, like, in his 80s and stuff. That wasn't just you pretending to be.
No, sir. It was not. There was a clear define. Yeah. Unless Luthez was putting out, you know, things about, you know, who's hotter, Trish Stratus or Mickie James, then no, that wasn't me.
Okay, so it wasn't the urban legend. I guess it's not an urban legend. It's considered true, but it wasn't just you. Huh? Okay, perfect.
No. But I will say this, though. I that was he was my first exposure to classic wrestling. And it's funny with me. I always have these phases. I don't try to act like I've been watching New Japan since I was 8. I've been watching New Japan now for probably about 4 or 5 years, you know, at the longest. And I always go through these phases where I find something new and I immediately love it, you know. And, like, for some reason, there was a period of time when I was a teenager when I started to actually get access, you know, the internet came up and started to get access to, like, old wrestling. And there was just something really cool about guys like Luthez and the really, really old stuff, because of how authentic and how much it just, you know, you kind of started understanding why people during a certain period didn't know that it was, you know, fake, or it was pre, you know, coordinated, whatever you want to call it, choreographed. But yeah, they were just so cool to me during this one period of time. So that's why I got on the whole Luthez kick. And I think that is me with a lot of things. Like when I found indie wrestling, it was the greatest thing ever. And I found somebody that I loved and I was a huge fan immediately. And, you know, same thing with New Japan. So I've always appreciated wrestling, but I've been able to appreciate it in different phases as I got older. And, I'm really pleased with how much I've been exposed to now and have had a chance to see live. It's been really cool.
Yeah, no. And I mean, it is so true. Luthez was awesome and stuff from that time period. I find myself being a bit of a purist and into that stuff. Like, you know, I'm super into the Grapple Frick, as some people have started taking to call it, but like the Timothy Thatcher, Drew Gulak, the guys who are bringing it back to the,
I love it so much. I love it so much.
But you mentioned that, I mean, you're on Honky Tonk's message board, so I can kind of assume you've been watching wrestling for minimum 10 years. Obviously, because you found out about Honky Tonk, it's been even longer. So how long do you think you've been a fan of wrestling, and has it been all on? Have you taken breaks? Have you gone in and out, you know, anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, I often say that there was a period of time where I watched wrestling like it was porn. You know, I wanted to keep up with it, but I didn't want people to know I was watching it. So if they walked into a room while I was watching it, I would change the channel. I was a closet wrestling fan, you know? But yeah, I've been watching it since I was about 8, and I'm 35 now. So I've been watching it for a long time. I think when I was younger, I was the only person in my house that watched it. You know, I was ridiculed by my older brothers for the fact that it was fake. And, you know, anytime there was blood on TV, I ran to get them to prove to them how wrong and stupid they were. And then from there, it was just kind of like trying to find it because no one was really telling me when it was on. So I remember that being a constant struggle for me. Like, even though TBS had it on pretty regularly for, you know, WCW stuff, I still struggled finding the exact time when it was on. It was always exciting for me when I found it. And so, yeah, like I watched it pretty steadily, I think up until about the late, or like probably like 91, 92 is when things started getting to the point where even though I still appreciated a Papa Shango and, you know, the ridiculousness of like Doink the Clown and stuff, it just got too much for me. And I will say that like video games have always been my connection to wrestling, even when I didn't watch it. Like, no matter what, I was always playing a wrestling video game. I was always up to date on, you know, like, guys, even if I wasn't really watching the product. But, yeah, WCW in, like, 95 brought me back in, you know, when the whole NWO thing started happening and, you know, people started talking about Kevin Nash and Scott Hall showing up on WCW and everything like that. That got me intrigued. But once I saw Hulk Hogan go full heel and tell people that they were stupid for eating their, you know, saying their prayers and, you know, taking their vitamins, I think I've been hooked ever since. So that was like 96. So ever since then, I've never stopped watching wrestling.
Yeah. And you strike me a little bit as like a heel fan. Am I out of line in that? Are you a heel fan kind of guy?
No, you're 100% right. Like, I liked heels even before I really knew that I liked heels. You know, like,
right.
I liked Macho Man, you know, and then, like, when Macho Man would go through his heel phase, you know, because that was, he was a constant up and down guy. And whenever he would be, you know, acting the heel, I had his back. Like, it was justified in my mind. And, you know, like, there wasn't a time where I was like, oh, Macho, why are you doing this? No, it was, no, he's right. You shouldn't mess with this woman and all that stuff, you know? But yeah, I have been a heel fan. I think heels are just more interesting. I think that they, I had a love for Roddy Piper before I even knew, you know, why. I now completely understand it, you know, but yeah, I think heels were just always the better characters. Baby faces have just been too, you know, stereotypical. They're too heroic. I think even as a young kid, I was always a Batman fan over Superman. And nice. So that's why I'm always going to be like a CM Punk fan over John Cena, you know?
Yeah. And it's hard. I guess it's hard to show that depth of character when, you know, you're supposed to be a good guy through and through, but
right.
Do you think that holds through like to you in other facets? like, I don't know, when you watch a movie, do you root for the bad guy? You know, like a James Bond movie, are you rooting for the bad guy? Or,
Well, it's funny you say that, because I just had the conversation with my wife about Batman 66. And I told her how, like, me watching it as a kid in reruns was completely contingent on who the villain was. Because they would tell you, like, right after the credits, they would always be like, and Cesar Romero as the Joker, you know, and you'd be like, hey, all right, Joker's on, that's awesome. Or it'd be King Tut, and you're like, changing the channel, you know. And so I think I've always been more interesting. James Bond is another one, because I wanted the villains in James Bond to be more over the top, you know, like, the more over the top and ridiculous the villain was, you know. Odd Job being one of my favorite because of, you know, having a gimmick and there's, you know, something to them. But yeah, I think I've always, I won't say I rooted for them, but I think I always found villains to be really cool characters, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, it's that side of life that you don't get to, I guess, express in your day-to-day, or you feel like you shouldn't express in your day-to-day life, right? Like Roddy Piper telling someone to stick it and taking the shortcuts. You're not, you know, you don't feel like you can get away with doing that in your life. So he's kind of doing it for you. And it's probably why that 90s, the Attitude Era period, kind of exploded, because you had not only the NWO with Hogan, who's like the childhood fantasy hero, saying, you know, that was all, you know, BS and I'm actually a jerk and racist, which was weird.
Totally. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I know. It's the weird part of his character, but we should have seen it. And then, you know, Austin being the anti-hero, kind of, I'm totally act like a jerk all the time, but, you know, everyone's cheering for him kind of thing. It's kind of probably why it was so popular, and it's, you know, why it brought you back in as well. And then, so then from there, would you say, have you been pretty steadily on? Did you even go through that kind of lull period in the early 2000s when, you know, mainstream wrestling was terrible? As you said, your fandom kind of expands to different areas. So whereabouts, you know, I mean, what did you do in that period when it was kind of down in the WWE, WCW was gone?
I think that was probably the time that my interest was lowest. And that's a good point to bring up. I think I was so invested in it by that point. Like when you it's like a bad television show on, you know, that on like CBS that lasts forever. Like sometimes you're like, I don't even know why I watch CSI anymore, I just do, you know. Like that became wrestling for me after a while, because it was so good during the late 90s that when we got to, you know, the beginning of the Randy Orton John Cena era, it definitely lost a lot of traction. I think that for a long time, there was a lot of hope held out for things that were going to happen. And you still had interesting stuff that happened. Like, I remember I was always into Brock Lesnar. So Brock Lesnar, you know, and Paul Heyman, that was a really intriguing thing for me. Once the ECW thing, you know, came back, I had a lot of hope for that. And that really brought me around, even though, you know, I could see through it, you know, three episodes in, what we were really getting. So it was, you know, it has its ups and downs, but I think for the most part, during that period of time, you didn't have a lot of alternatives. I became a TNA fan, you know, I watched a lot of TNA, I'm not going to lie, you know, but, and I know now why, you know, seeing half of the roster in WWE now making, you know, a splash, it's not like TNA didn't have the talent. They had the talent, they just, you know, they weren't putting together storylines. But I think it was too easy to stay up to date on it after that. I mean, I lived through the generation where wrestling actually was on for me at 10 o'clock at night, started at 10 o'clock at night here in Phoenix. So that's pretty hard on a school kid to stay up till midnight watching wrestling. It's not to say I didn't, but there was a lot of nights that I passed out midway through, you know, taping it on my VCR so that way I didn't miss it. You know, as I got older, it became a little bit easier to stay in touch with it. You know, you could read about what happened online. You could DVR it and things like that. So I think that there was probably a period of time where I was recording it and kind of fast forwarding through it pretty fast. But I always watched it. I always stayed up to date. Like I said, after the late 90s, I never actually had a period of time where I stopped watching it. There was just periods of time where I stopped caring. Like when people bring stuff up, I'm always like, oh yeah, that did happen. I remember watching that. Like, I remember watching that, but if I, like, it just completely was erased from my brain that it ever even happened.
Yeah, no, it's sometimes it can feel that way, and I think you're right. It's like once you get over a certain hump, if you come back to wrestling, it seems that people are just committed for life at that point. But I guess speaking of life, we'll take a quick break, listen to a couple of ads plugging other shows here on PTBN, and then we'll come back and talk about your life outside of your wrestling fandom.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you're subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Just head to iTunes today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO PTBN feed, PTBN Pop, and of course the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcasts. Some really great stuff. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. Thanks for being a fan of professional wrestling. More importantly, thanks for being a fan and supporter of the Place to Be Nation.
All right, so we're back, and as I said, we're going to talk about your life. And, I mean, you mentioned living in Arizona. Is that where you're kind of born and bred, born and raised, or did you move to Phoenix later on in life?
No, I've lived here the majority of my life. Like, my family's from Puerto Rico, and, you know, like, I've been here the majority of my life. I've moved around a little bit. I lived in Puerto Rico in high school and in New York, and then kind of came back here. I've spent so much time here. It was hard, you know, to live elsewhere. But one nice thing was when I was in New York, that's when I got exposed to being able to watch ECW weekly. And that was really cool because I didn't even have that here. And that was the one thing I think I truly missed when I moved away. I was like, oh, damn it. No more ECW on like Friday nights or whatever night it was on.
Had to get that satellite, man. That was the trick. And then you could watch the Sunside station at 6 in the morning every third Wednesday or something. That was literally the worst TV show to ever try to follow. So I know you're also into, like, you know, the other boring sports that have, you know, real winners and losers, right? So you
those things, yeah.
Yeah, so you do – I'm sorry because I don't, you know, I don't think I would be able to pick it up because – I don't live in Phoenix, but you do broadcasting or just sports coverage?
Yeah, no, I do.
For different teams.
We had a show on NBC Sports here, and then it kind of turned into a podcast, and I'm not particularly a part of it as much anymore. But yeah, we used to have a weekly show. I've just been so ridiculously busy with the Steel Cage and everything else that I do. It's hard, but I do cover local sports teams for thesportscave.com. So I get to cover the Diamondbacks and Sun Devils, ASU football, Suns, a couple other things. So it's pretty awesome. I enjoy sports. I enjoy covering live events. And I think the one thing is I really like talking to people. You know, I think that I treat athletes with the certain amount of respect, and it's kind of the same thing with wrestlers, you know. I respect what these people do, and I respect how hard they work. And, you know, it's kind of changed for me, you know, like when you start meeting wrestlers in real life and you start realizing that they're real people, it's the same thing with athletes. You know, it's easy to sit around online and criticize people that you don't really think of as being normal people. But then when you meet them in a locker room or you know, talk to them briefly after a game or whatever, and you just start to realize that that's some guy that the pressure of the world was on to win a game, and he did or didn't do it. And, you know, you can see the hurt in his face when he doesn't do it, or you can see the joy when he does. And, you know, you just start to realize that they're, you know, real people, and that they get treated in a pretty, you know, terrible way sometimes. And it's kind of the same thing with wrestlers, you know. You start to meet them, especially at the smaller shows, you know, stuff like PWG and Ring of Honor and these shows where the performers are more accessible. And not only can you like meet them and take a picture with them, but sometimes they'll sit and talk to you for 10, 15 minutes about wrestling. And it's really cool. And it makes you start to realize once again that they're people, and they're trying their best, and they're living their dreams. And, you know, let's not constantly bash them or, you know, talk online about how, you know, you wish terrible things happened to them.
Yeah, no, right? It's funny how they're also people.
Yeah.
Just these characters. And that's a weird line in wrestling. I mean,
Yes.
I don't know if you follow the, you know, the wrestling Twitter and all the dirt that goes on in there with the banter being king, but there's just recently an issue with a young guy who's, you know, kind of trying to make a name for himself, Leo Rush. You know, he asked a promoter to give him a video of his match, and
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, the guy who put on the show is, I like to consider him a friend. He's at least a colleague over at Wrestling with Words with me, and a damn fine booker and promoter. And it turns into an argument on Twitter, it's like, you just go like, oh man, I enjoyed that guy's work as a wrestler, but he's not just this character and the thing. And then it bleeds into his personal life and him maybe making a bonehead decision, 'cause the kid's like, you know, probably not even 21 yet. Right. You know, and it sucks in some ways, 'cause it's like, how do you separate, what do you judge? And then when you're mixing stuff, 'cause I know you do commentary for, is it Phoenix Pro or is it actually
it's PHX?
You say PHX. Okay.
Yeah. PHX Wrestling. Yeah. Which is another really cool thing that I never thought in a million years I would be doing, but it's a lot of fun, and it is hard. It's hard because I'm a person that likes to bring a lot of real stuff into this, you know, and like, I do my research on guys. I bring up things that, you know, have happened. Some of our wrestlers at PHX are, you know, guys that, you know, you're familiar with, Willie Mack and such. And some guys are lesser known guys like Ricky Starks. And Ricky, you know, he was made momentarily famous by Ryback on an episode of Raw when Ryback put him through a table, you know, when he was in his bullying phase. And so, like, you know, there's things like that that I like to tease them about a bit on commentary, but I don't know, sometimes when I'm doing it, like all of a sudden when I say something, I'm like, oh my God, I hope he doesn't get mad about that, you know, because it's not like everything gets cleared and everything. And I'm trying not to bring too much like personal dirt or ruin a person's character or anything like that. The internet kind of makes it hard because in some cases I know too much about people, you know, too much, and you bring too much information about it. For the most part, I'm trying to be professional when I'm doing commentating, you know, and not cross any lines or anything, but people have no problem doing that when it comes to, you know, sometimes, you know, directly tweeting to some of these guys, or like you said, in Leo Rush's case, I think that's just a case of, you know, being young and immature and not realizing that there was, you know, greater reasons about why you wouldn't, you know, put video like that out, and how a promoter might want to actually sell that in some way, you know, versus just giving it away for free on YouTube. And, you know, but like, you know, mistakes are made. And the thing is it's really easy to not let things spiral out of control. And I feel like in some cases that's what people do. You know, like if someone calls you out for something like that, you simply have to kind of eat crow and say, hey man, sorry about that, I'll take it down. You know, that's kind of the only way you can really handle a situation like that or a mistake. Some people, I mean, I don't know. Twitter's really interesting because Twitter brings a completely new dynamic to wrestling as a whole. You have some people who are literally trying to use their Twitter accounts and live like a real normal life. And it's like, you know, there's so many people that I'm sure are reading their tweets thinking like, why is Goldust always talking about this show with his daughter? Why is this? Why, you know, like people are trying to promote their own thing or talk about, like, in some cases politics or whatever. And, you know, it can rub wrestling fans the wrong way. It's a really weird thing because Twitter can actually help, you know, a wrestler become famous. They can help them get jobs. They can help them become a household name, or they can, like, you know, ruin a person and make people like, so, you know, turned off by them that they don't want to watch them in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And it's funny you mentioned Ricky Starks, because I just actually reviewed one of his matches on one of my other shows in that FIP. And it almost feels like, to me, I know he's just kind of breaking out. He's had a couple good matches in Inspire, including one just recently with Keith Lee that I've heard good stuff about. And I've heard good stuff about Ricky Starks in general. And he's out there working at the Arizona show. And I didn't even... I guess I didn't know about the Ryback thing, or I didn't think about it, but he's a guy who feels like he's just breaking out. And it's so funny because, you know, you're calling his matches, you know him, or maybe, I don't know your relationship, but you kind of have probably met him and dealt with him in day to day, and he's starting to kind of break out. But I'm looking at other people on this upcoming, I think it's an upcoming show for PHX, the Straight Out of Phoenix.
That was the last one. That was October.
Oh, that already happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've got, like you said, Willie Mack, you've got Thunder Rosa, Hall of Dead. And I'm just looking through, you got like Brittany Wonder and Steve-O Reno. And I just realized you guys get a lot of the kind of some of the Texas people. And Brittany Wonder's from out here, or she's from up in the Bay. But I know Steve-O Reno is a... he's either Chicago or I'm trying to think if he's Texas, but some of these names are familiar from the Texas scene. So I guess I never really thought about it. Does the Arizona or PHX where you're specifically working, do you guys bring in a lot of guys from all over or like a lot of locals in Arizona?
I think the majority of it is people that can consistently, you know, appear at dates. So that way they can tell a cohesive story, even at an indie show. Versus having just kind of random people come in. I really think that's their main focus. So they worked with talent that obviously, you know, the getting someone like Willie Mack, Thunder Rosa, some of those names that people recognize are, you know, are a big deal. But on top of that, they wanted to bring in, you know, talented guys that, you know, like Ricky Starks is a perfect example of somebody that has just been really impressive. I've enjoyed his steel work. I think it's way over the top and it's really funny and it's his in-ring work is good. But most of all, he seems to have a pretty good attitude when it comes to certain aspects of working. You know, I chatted with him before the match. I mean, I think that's one of the cool things for me personally is I have ideas. I have little things that I, you know, come up with, but I'm not really trying to make anybody listen to me or do anything that they don't want to do. And, you know, working an indie show like that and be able to make suggestions to these guys and having them actually take it into consideration and do it. And then like, you know, sitting at a table and watching it all play out being like, oh, that was my idea. He's doing it. That's cool. You know? And like stuff like that for me has been just really fun as a wrestling fan, you know, but, you know, for the most part, I think everybody on the roster that they brought in have been, you know, people that seemingly have, you know, good reputation of working well and kind of work in the Southwest, you know, Southern California, Texas area. So it's a really good mix. We do have some local Arizona guys, but I've noticed the majority of the roster does kind of come from here or there. And I think that's kind of cool because Arizona has never had a really significant independent wrestling scene. And it's not to say we haven't had something that exists here, but it's never really brought in, you know, names that consistently wrestle elsewhere and kind of have a reputation and have a following. So things like PHX Wrestling and Championship Wrestling of Arizona are consistently bringing in some big names from at least, you know, California and these areas. So it's nice to see that changing. Just honestly, as a wrestling fan, I'm excited to be able to not have to travel, you know, 300 plus miles to go see a decent wrestling show.
Yeah, and again, looking at your looking at the roster and the people, and as you're talking about trying to build shows that are around kind of storytelling and people that are reliable, it's funny because it feels like there is kind of becoming a swell of I guess you would say like Southwest talent that are, I mean, you know, Arizona to Los Angeles is not close, and then I don't know if Arizona to Houston is close, but I know that, you know, our three states, Southern California, it seems like Arizona and Texas are booking a lot of the same people, using a lot of the same guys. So it's really interesting how it's like kind of being put together. I mean, obviously me and you ran into each other at PWG show, which is super fun, but there isn't a lot of like show to show storytelling and there isn't a lot of, you know, regionalism. And it's
right.
It's funny because we've almost come full circle and we're supposed to be talking about your, you know, your life right now. But this is what happens when, you know, you get a couple of wrestling nerds on a Skype call.
This is my life. Let's be honest.
Exactly. What's funny is we talk, you know, we come full circle in that you were talking earlier about old school wrestling, and it's almost like a territory system has kind of reinvigorated itself through these indies. And instead
yes.
of one company running all these different towns, it's a bunch of different companies who stay in their one town. And I don't like. What do you think about that? Do you see that revitalization? Do you appreciate it? Or as someone who goes to PWG as well, I mean, you make that long trip. It's a lot longer than mine. You know, I could see there's a place for everything, but what do you think? Do you like the kind of resurgence of the territories more in the places where they are clearly telling stories? Or do you like the super indie PWG weekend vibe? Like, what do you think? What's your preference?
No, I like the regional stuff. I like that the territories in a way are coming back. I think it's influenced the WWE, right? Because Cruiserweight Classic and some of the stuff we've seen them doing. I think just in general, NXT is being ran very similarly to like a smaller, you know, independent regional kind of thing. It's interesting, and I think it gives people, especially performers, an opportunity to work consistently and not have to work for WWE. You know, there's plenty of big names, there's plenty of quality wrestlers that haven't been signed by WWE, and you know, it's giving an opportunity for these guys to become big names, and then WWE can pick them up, you know, whenever they want to, because that seems to be the trend. You know, right now we have guys like Jeff Cobb, we have guys like Ricochet, you know, we have some of these guys that are kind of everywhere right now. You know, you see them in England, even you see them in Chicago, you see them at PWG, you see them everywhere. I myself kind of like, you know, the stories a bit. You know, I like them to keep it somewhat contained. I like the roster to be a roster. You know, I don't necessarily feel like the super shows have a lot to offer, except in the case of, like, I don't know, WrestleMania weekend or something like that. Like, those, I don't mind going to those shows then. And I like PWG, even though I know PWG isn't consistent. They're just more of kind of one of those type of shows. But for the most part, I think, especially if it's an indie show that I have the opportunity to go see, like, locally and see it often, yeah, I want to see a returning roster. I want to see storylines that make sense. I mean, I was always a big fan of, like, what Evolve was doing. I even though I wasn't watching Evolve or keeping up to date visually on it, I was always reading what Evolve was doing, and all of their storyline and things that they did have always struck me as being interesting over the last few years. So, you know, and they continue to. I like their little documentaries that they keep producing. You know, it goes to show you that you don't need a high production value to produce a really cool little documentary featuring storylines or particular wrestlers or anything like that. So I love it. I think that wrestling needs competition to be good. I think, you know, that time period you brought up earlier of the 2000s, that was bad because WWE didn't have to try anymore, you know? So now you have the fact that they have to try, you know, and they have to keep up, you know, keep going. I mean, no one's going to stop them at this point. They're not even a wrestling promotion anymore. They're a corporate juggernaut, but, you know, they have to keep at the top level or else people really will go elsewhere. There's other options for people, and those options are basically $9.99 as well to get online. So it's not the world that we used to live in where WWE was your only option.
Okay, so working, doing commentary. So I do want to ask you a question because it popped into my head the other day when I was watching a show. Do you, and why don't other commentators take the time to just ask a guy what they call their moves? Because I absolutely do.
I go around with a notepad before the show starts, and I ask them, like, do you have signature moves? Do you have finishing moves? What's all your stuff called? Because I don't want to screw it up, and I don't want to call, like, your awesome sounding finishing move just a DDT, you know?
Right, exactly. I don't remember what I was watching, but it was something. I was like, I cannot believe I know the name of this guy's move and the commentator doesn't. And I just felt like, I just go and ask the guys. It shouldn't be hard to just, like, get that figured out before the show starts, you know?
It isn't. And what's really interesting to me with the wrestling culture is how, like, it seems to be part of wrestling where the performers come in and make sure they go and, like, shake everybody that works for the promotion's hand. Like, even if they're a ring crew putting together the ring, if they're an announcer, they could be a guy putting out, you know, food or whatever, and they go and make sure, like, because I see everybody do that, and it's part of, I don't know, it must be some sort of, like, unwritten rule or just, you know, good manners, but I like that, and I found that made it easier for me to kind of at least strike up that initial conversation with them that, you know, hey, when you have a moment, I'd like to talk to you about your moves. And one wrestler, Crossface Cody, or Cutthroat Cody, I'm sorry, Cutthroat Cody, he was just so appreciative that I wanted to take the time out to do that. Like, it struck me almost as odd. And I'm like, it's like you said, I really can't believe more commentators wouldn't take the time to do that. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just trying my best here to, you know, go onto a show. And it's something I've always wanted to do. They gave me the opportunity to do it, and I'm really thankful for it. But, you know, the one thing I want to do is do right by the performers. It's kind of like what I was saying earlier. I want to bring real stuff into this. And I approach commentating from kind of a heelish angle. I try not to go full bore, you know, full bore heel. But I definitely try to approach it from kind of being a little bit of a jerk. And I tend to find that, you know, I still don't want to like insult them on a real level, you know, like, so that's like with some of the stuff I try to think about, like, oh, would he really care about that? Yeah, no, I don't think so. He'll be fine. And, you know, I also try not to, like, you know, ruin it too much by sitting there and speaking about, you know, like Ricky Starks getting put through a table like 5 or 6 times. It's a brief mention as kind of a joke, and then I move on, you know, but for the most part, I want them to be happy with my announcing. You know, I don't really care what they think about me as a character or anything like that, but I don't want them to like hear it on DVD one day and be like, that jerk off didn't even call any of my moves right. You know, so that's pretty much where I'm coming from with that kind of stuff.
Got it. Okay. Well, I mean, that's to be expected. So are you kind of just a hired gun for PHX? Do they just bring you in to do commentary based on your, I guess, your world-renowned podcasting skills? Or?
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of made a mention of it that I was definitely interested in working with them. And I mean, I've kind of worked in relation with some other shows that we brought in here to Phoenix, but it was more just in promotions and such, like not really working at the show. I've been a photographer, a ringside photographer at a couple of shows. So I've just kind of always hovered around the wrestling business. I mean, I'm a fan, and I won't lie. I mean, there was a time where I had ridiculous aspirations to be a wrestler, just like I'm sure everybody does at one point. But I always kind of wanted to be involved more with the creation of it, you know? So creatively, I thought it would be fun to write or to come up and book stuff. I thought, you know, doing commentary would be amazing, especially if I got the opportunity to do what I do, which is, you know, just color. It's the perfect amount of spice to a match, and you really don't have to take on that obligation of being the play-by-play guy, which I think is very difficult. I definitely, you know, I know my moves, I know what I'm doing. But it's definitely hard. And for me, especially, it's hard to, cause I'm just naturally snarky in my brain. So it would be hard for me to keep concentrated on being like the straight man versus being able to kind of just say whatever stupid thing that comes to my brain about, you know, what I thought about somebody doing something. I tend to like complain a lot about, you know, people, placating to the fans and such. So, I try to be reasonable with my heel, you know, heelness, but I also try to be fair and dull it out to everybody. So if I see anybody placating to the fans, they're stupid, in my opinion. I don't care if you're a good guy or a bad guy, you know. So there's stuff like that. But I think, you know, people that do, like, I'm a big Mauro Ranallo fan. I know that he gets criticized for almost being too nerdy about his wrestling calling, but when I listen to that man call matches, especially now that I commentate, I realize how fast the show goes when you're trying to call it. I have a whole new appreciation for what he's able to do and how much knowledge he has, because it's not easy. And you have no idea what these guys are going to do. Like, you know what the finishers are called. You might be familiar with their moveset, but you really have no idea what they're going to do. And it comes at you so fast that when I see someone, you know, like JR or Mauro, that are able to stay on top of it so well, it really impresses me.
Yeah, well, you know, I was gonna just mention, as you said in there, I think any aspirations that you may have had of wanting to be a pro wrestler aren't super foolish, because I've seen your guns, and to steal a phrase from Mauro, they are lit.
Hey, yeah.
But But no, you know, we'll take another quick break and we'll come back and maybe I'll let Adrian get into some of that comic books and nerdy talk that I don't know anything about, huh?
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzuto here. In addition to the archives of The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's Past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. All of this in addition to Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom, which includes discussions on questions from listeners, as well as current day and old school wrestling. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, we're back with Derek Montilla. Derek, you mentioned earlier that your parents are from Puerto Rico. Are you Puerto Rican?
I am Puerto Rican, yeah.
Do you speak Spanish?
I speak terrible Spanish. I understand way more than I know because I grew up with two parents that thought they could speak it right in front of me and not have me know what they were saying, so I had to learn real fast. But I'm still in a beginner phase. I actually lived in Puerto Rico for a while during high school, so I went to high school with having a very terrible knowledge of Spanish. I got by okay, but it was pretty daunting, which is one of the main reasons why I retreated back to Phoenix.
Yeah, and Phoenix, you know, I went to school there for about 3 years, 3.5 years. I lived there. I haven't been back in a long time. How is Phoenix doing these days? How's it looking? Pretty good?
Yeah, it's good. I think Phoenix is in a position where they've done a lot to make it look better. There's been a lot of renovations to Phoenix, and I think that there's been some changes to the perception, because I think Arizona as a whole, like, with a lot of political things and a lot of, you know, our leaders and whatnot, it got a bad reputation. But
Phoenix is pretty liberal, though, right? I mean,
yeah, it's kind of weird. I think what the thing is it's kind of like Florida in the aspect that we have a lot of retirees and they vote versus younger people. So even though, like, Phoenix is a pretty liberal city and area, especially, like, downtown's completely changed. I mean, my wife grew up near downtown. We go there now, and she's still doesn't even recognize it. She has no idea what the hell is going on, and it's changed for the better. There's a lot of cool stuff to do, a lot of cool bars and restaurants downtown now. But yeah, no, I think for the most part, that's the thing is when you have a lot of retirees, it's going to be a very conservative view. And I think that, like, there's some things that Arizona, you know, did, and, like, you know, we have Sheriff Joe Arpaio that constantly is like this weird.
He's being convicted or something, right?
Yeah, like
they're throwing the cat in.
Well, and I mean, you know, it's one of those things that it's weird to see a guy like that on the news all the time, because when you don't live here, you don't see it constantly. But, you know, he is one of these guys that spits in the face of the authority, despite the fact that he's a sheriff and, you know, does what he wants and runs
things.
Well,
not to get too political, but he's racist. I mean, that's not mince words here. The guy's a fucking racist. Like, right. I was so happy to see that on the news the other day. It's like, I can't think of anyone who deserves it more than someone like him. Like, fuck that guy.
It's the
you know
worst.
What I mean?
I was so glad with the day that someone put a giant hot air balloon up of him, like, in stripes. It's like him. It's a giant balloon, like, for a kid's party. But it's him in prison stripes, handcuffed. And they just have it outside of, like, the courtroom where all of this proceedings is taking place. And, you know, it's kind of vindicating to see someone like that that's done, like, what I've perceived as being wrong and so many others have perceived wrong, like going through this. But at the same time, too, it's kind of weird that he's still, with all the scandal and everything, he's still in the race. He's still, you know, he's still right in the hunt to be reelected as sheriff. And that's the part that's nutty. You know, it kind of goes into a lot of other stuff that we're experiencing with politics. But I think for the most part, when I, you know, when you live in it like this and you don't agree with any of the stuff that goes on politically, it's weird. You know, you live in a place that's like getting picked on by show like The Daily Show and, you know, stuff like that. And rightfully so. But at the same time, too, when you live here, you're like, yeah, this isn't, it's not that, you know. It's not what people think it is. It's actually like
I never perceived how conservative Arizona was when I lived there. Honestly, it wasn't until after I left that I started hearing about all this stuff. And
well,
I was kind of surprised because, like you said, like when you live there, it's not like that.
It's not, and you know, and that's why I think it makes it hard. You know, going back to stuff like the wrestling scene, right? The wrestling scene is a certain kind of people, and when you have a reputation like Arizona has, then yeah, you can understand why more shows or more wrestlers don't show up here. You know what I mean? It's kind of like sport teams. People don't think that comes into a play when recruiting athletes and trying to bring in free agents. But guess what? It sure does. You know, it sure does. Yeah. Especially when on top of all of that stuff, you have people pointing out that the Arizona Diamondbacks only have one black player on the team. You know,
do they
only one black player? Like, don't get me wrong. There's plenty of Latino players that are, you know, black and stuff like that. So that's why to me, it was even surprising. Cause I'm like, I think of like six or seven black guys that I talk to regularly, but you know, not being of, you know, of Hispanic origin, there's only one black guy, Ricky Weeks, on the team. And you know, even that becomes, you know, like a thing. And then all of a sudden it somehow gets blown up to being all about Arizona again. So, perception with this place is very different than how it is. You know, I
love still
it
have
here.
That crazy governor, Jan Brewer, there, or someone else?
No, she's gone. They got Doug Ducey. She was an insane person. And like that goes back during
insane, man. Yeah. She like got all crazy on Obama a few years back, I remember. She got like in his face and like started talking shit to him.
Exactly. Well, and that goes back to the whole gray hair thing, right? Because we have this retiree community here. We literally have a goddamn town that young people aren't allowed to live in.
Which town is that?
It's called Sun City. Called Sun City, Arizona, and you're.
I've heard of. Whereabouts is Sun City? I've heard of it.
It's actually pretty close to Glendale, which is where, you know, the Cardinal Stadium is. It's kind of northwest Phoenix.
Oh, and, okay.
Yeah, and
yeah, I told you, Sam. I told you every major city has a Glendale.
It's true. We've got a couple of them in California.
Right. But yeah, no, it's one of those things that, again, when you grow up with it, you start to think it's not weird, but then when you step back and you're like, holy shit, there's a whole city that young people can't live in? Like, what the crap is that? Like, you know, so it just goes to show you that there's weird, you know, kind of rules, and there's, you know, there's a retiree population here that they don't want. And that's part of, like, they make the rules where they have these, you know, town meetings, and they all decide that they don't want to let people under a certain age live in the community.
Which,
you know,
is funny, because who would want to live there? What young people would want to live there anyway? You know what I mean?
It's not really separated far away from everything. It's like right smack in the middle of, you know, other parts of town. So, you know, to live there isn't a bad area, but it's just, again, I'm one of those people all about fairness, and it's crazy to me that in this day and age there's a town that doesn't let people of any kind of anything not live there. Like, oh, you're too young, you can't live here. And like, that's kind of the mindset. You know, those are the same people that go out and are the first ones in line to vote here versus my friends who are too busy, you know, drinking and putting it off till the next day. So that's, you know, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I think really drives, you know, some of those uncharacteristic decisions that you see, you know, Arizona make there. It's always a very Republican state in the voting. You know, even now, like I said, Sheriff Joe Arpaio in like a more liberal state wouldn't even be anywhere close to being reelected, but it's still close here. You know what I mean? Because people, especially older people, I think they like, you know, consistency, and it's easier for them to vote. That's how Jan Brewer, she didn't like get voted in as governor. She got made governor because she got appointed because the other governor stepped down. And, you know, and then they voted her back in despite her crazy ass, you know, tantrums and the stuff she did. So, I mean, it's weird, but like I said, I like it here. I've lived elsewhere. I love the weather here. I like, you know, the people are cool. The Mexican food is awesome. There's lots of good things to like about Arizona and Phoenix.
Yeah, I always tell people that Phoenix is like a big version of where I'm from, where we're from, Palm Springs, but better because it's an actual city. You know, like there's actually more to it, and there's more people and stuff. And like Phoenix, there's a lot of old people in Palm Springs, a lot of retirees who are usually conservative because people think California is like this big liberal haven, but it's actually not as liberal as people think it is, you know?
Yeah.
The Orange County is pretty conservative, and Riverside County, where we're from, is also pretty conservative if you think about it. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's the heat. Maybe is it the desert? I don't know what it is, man. It's weird.
Well, I think that brings people to it, and that's the difference is that we're like Phoenix is one of those states where, you know, 75% of the population is from somewhere else. That's what, you know. So like that's and a lot of people come here to retire. So I don't know if as you get older you get more conservative, or like you said, maybe, I don't know, maybe the heat, no, jerky's your brain. I don't know, but some of the decisions being made, it's just kind of nice sometimes when I'll say this, it's nice when you're a state like Arizona and then here comes North Carolina taking all the heat off you. Thanks, North Carolina. You're way crazier than
right
us
now.
Shit, people forgot all about SB 1070. You
know? I always said that I think it's because even though Arizona's not the hottest state, I think I read somewhere that Arizona has like the hottest capital city. And that's why there's so many crazy ass laws there. Is because the people who are supposed to be writing the laws are in the hottest part of the fucking state, so they like.
What kind of laws are you talking about? Because I found that Arizona's got less laws than California. California's got more strict laws about stupid shit like riding your bike with a helmet on and stuff.
I don't think riding your bike with a helmet is that stupid, is it?
No, what I'm saying is that in California, you have to legally ride your bicycle with a helmet on. In other states like Arizona, like Colorado, you don't have laws like that. Like you don't have laws where you have to do things in order to maintain your personal safety. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're more loose about that kind of shit.
I guess I get what you're saying.
And, like, California has stricter gun laws than Arizona does, so...
Which is also a negative thing.
I just found out that you... Oh, yeah. God.
Anyways, I interrupted you. What were you saying?
I was going to say, I never felt like I lived in more of a backward state than people were, like, really pushing hard for this law to allow people to take guns in the bars. And I'm just like, why? I don't understand why. Like, why you know what alcohol does? You know what firearms do. Why are you like so dead set on making this a combination that goes together? Like,
yeah,
this is gonna be the new
thing.
Peanut butter
everybody's chocolate. Armed. Like, isn't it fair game at that point?
Yeah,
like,
I think
should
I,
you really
think
be worried about somebody?
That's
shooting?
The thing. People are like, I don't want to take my gun off to walk inside the bar. Damn it! We need a law about this, but. No, I mean, I don't know. It's that's like a lot of things here, man. I don't know. A lot of things, you know, tend to get exaggerated. But then also, I grew up here, so I'm used to it. And then...
Do you live in Metro Phoenix?
Yeah, I live in Metro Phoenix. Oh,
I lived in Tempe when I was there.
Yeah.
Tempe's a cool town. It's a college town.
Yeah, totally. I'd kill myself if I lived there just because I can't stand college kids anymore. But that's a whole other thing. That's going to ASU games drive me nuts sometimes.
No, I hear you. There's a lot of crazy people in Arizona. It seemed like when I was there, like just people from all walks of life, like you were saying, because most of the people that live there aren't from there, right?
No, I mean, I think that's the thing. But now it's weird because Arizona is getting very weird, like on an LA type level of weird, where you know what I mean? Like you go downtown and there's like just some dude, you know, in underwear and roller skates skating around, and everybody's just walking past him like they've seen him a million times. You know, you're like, huh, well, how progressive of you guys just to walk past a weirdo and not even acknowledge him. I'm so impressed, you know. I think that's the thing is that it is becoming, you know, one of those kind of, like, there's never a time where I go to an event downtown where there's not some crazy person protesting it and telling us how we're all going to go to hell for going to it or whatever, you know. It's become, you know, like I said, it's become a very crazy, colorful place as far as that's concerned. But I don't know. I like the people here because of the fact that you get so many people from different areas. I'm glad that I was able, you know, to come on with the Steel Cage guys, because even though they're all here, you know, we've become kind of like a worldly podcast. And, you know, now I have, you know, a friend that lives in Dubai. I have a friend that lives in London. I have a couple of friends that live in Australia. All of that, to me, you know, is very cool. And I think it's cool that it's people that you still hear that have expanded out themselves. So I don't know. I'm into all that. And I think Phoenix is a great place to live for that, unless you're a sports fan, because being a sports fan here is really tough. You don't have the dedicated, you know, sports fans like you do in other states, because a lot of people come from somewhere else. So when you go to like a Cubs game against the Diamondbacks, you're 75-25 split in favor of the Cubs. You know, there's not a real home field advantage for people or for the sports teams here. So I will say that's the one downside of, you know, having such a melting pot, because people don't come here. Like, people go to LA and they become a Dodgers fan, you know, like that's like the way it is. It's kind of like New York too. You go to New York and you're like, you become a Yankees fan. People come here and they're like, nope, I am, you know, I'm a Seattle Mariners fan and I'm never changing. And when the Mariners come here, I'm going to go there and I'm going to boo the crap out of the Diamondback and I'm going to cheer, you know, and that seemed to be the thing. Like, even players have brought that up, that it's kind of bothersome to always go out and have your home field advantage not be a home field.
See, it's the opposite here in Denver, man, because nobody here will show up about the goddamn Broncos. Everything is about the Broncos, everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I can only imagine. It's kind of like Seattle. You know,
Broncos
Seattle
this, the Broncos that. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I can imagine. But at the same time, too, it's, you know, it's that pride. Like, I will say the Arizona Cardinals were, you know, such a disaster for so many years. Growing up a fan of them, it wasn't easy. And it's kind of nice now that, you know, they made it to the Super Bowl and they got a solid coach and they have their own stadium and they became a big boy team. And it's nice to see the respect that they get now versus at one time when they were literally sharing space with the college team. And we're kind of the joke of the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, well, we just recently got the Rams back, and you're so right that, like, Los Angeles is all about embracing being from Los Angeles or living in Los Angeles. Even me personally, like, I'm a somewhat proud Los Angeles, if I'm perfectly honest. I love this city.
Well, you're not a sports
guy,
though.
It's not about the sports teams, but
about
my city. You know, I am proud of my city. And, you know, if I was into sports, I would support my local teams, of course.
What specifically are you proud of L.A., if you don't mind me asking?
No, it's fine. Just the culture, the art, the integration of different communities. I mean, you get more, I guess, just per capita, there's more people from different parts of the world all living together, creating this really, like, awesome symbiotic relationship where the different cultures mesh and meet and kind of create these fusions of sounds and colors and tastes and textures. And if you want to find something to do, you always can. Like, it doesn't matter what thing you're into, you can always find it in LA.
I love LA for that reason. I love LA for the fact that there's so much unique stuff to do. I think LA is a very trend-setting city, so you don't get to hear about something cool happening and then get one in your town 3 years later. You're the one that they're covering the cool thing happening in. You know, like, I drove by a cereal bar at 10 o'clock at night. A cereal bar that literally serves cereal.
Was this it was a cereal, not a bar dedicated to the podcast cereal, or they just cereal all day?
That would be good, though. Yeah, no, that'd be great. But no, this was a cereal, like, breakfast cereal bar.
I love breakfast cereal.
Oh, me too. And that's what got me excited about this. And it was 10 o'clock at night, and it was open, and it was packed.
Yes. Oh my
and that's
God.
The thing that makes me love
I'm moving
LA.
To LA tomorrow. Tim, yes. I'm going to be there.
Like, that's the kind of stuff, like, and it's right. I mean, I've done and experienced so many things in L.A. that, I mean, it's funny because then I came back here and I found that there were places here that did it. But the difference is, like, when I was in L.A. or San Jose or any place in California, really, it was, like, more prevalent. You know, like, there's boba tea on damn corner in L.A., you know? And it's like, I didn't even know what boba tea was, and now it's my new favorite thing. I'll drive 20 minutes to go to a place that's got boba tea. So, you know, like, it's stuff like that, I think, that has always been really cool to me. Plus, it's like, going back to there's just, I'll never get over just going to the beach. I'll never get over being able to go to, like, amusement parks whenever you want to. And that's all stuff that, like, I love the fact there are people in LA that have lived there for years and they still get really excited about, like, buying a Disneyland annual pass or whatever. You know, it's just, it's one of those places that it never seems like there's not something to do.
What's funny is that most of the stuff you know is like stuff Tim hates, like the beach, outdoors, Disneyland. Sorry, Tim, but,
no, but you know it's true.
The food is the best, though. The
he's
food
so
is
right,
the best.
Though. I mean, I do, I may, I don't like stuff like, okay, I don't like In-N-Out, right? And I've talked to you about it, and I don't like In-N-Out because I don't think it's worth the wait. But you say I don't like the beach, but there's mornings where I drop my wife off work on a Saturday morning, and then I have the dog, and I have just driven to the beach to go to the beach for the, you know, yes, just really? To hang, because it's just there,
you've
it's easy
that.
To get to, it's convenient, and it's like, yeah, oh, I'm just going to go, and it's not a thing. When it's a thing,
it's not like you have to go put down a blanket and put an umbrella in and all that. You just go walk there for 10 minutes
and
then go back home.
And because it's so easy and readily available for me, I do stuff like that now. And, like, it's not a big deal. That's my biggest problem is the ordeal of it, the hassle, and, like, kind of the cost-benefit analysis where I go, like, is it worth everything it's going to take to do it? No, not really. But when it doesn't take much, it's totally awesome.
I think that's the biggest problem is when you want to go somewhere in L.A. that you have to, like, determine if that time it's going to take you is worth it. And that's the only part that sucks is so many people like living there that it makes getting around sometimes
that's
absolutely
true.
Atrocious. But aside from that, you know, aside from that,
well,
it's pretty great.
What about Tim? Because you mentioned the culture, and I listened to another podcast where these guys are based out of L.A., and all dudes ragged on the culture there, like St. Hall. Just people there are so shallow because everybody to you know make it in the biz and all this. Like, do you ever encounter that when you go out and about in L.A., Tim, or even you, Derek? Either or.
Well, I was going to say we could special episode of the podcast where you interview me later, Adrian. But Derek, I don't know. The thing is that the business is totally different, and the reason why it's so totally different is that it's like the only business in the world, which is obviously show business, that feels the need to refer to itself as the business, and a lot of people involved in it call it that way. And it does have issues, but Hollywood, what people think of as Hollywood, what people think of as the film industry, is such a small part of L.A., but it's overrepresented, honestly. The part of L.A., yes.
Is that what it is? That's what it is. Huh?
100%. Because it's in the media, it's what people cover, because it is what it, you know, it is its own thing, but the entire time I've lived in L.A., I've gone to Hollywood, actual, like, Hollywood, maybe once to see a friend's band play in the back in the backstage of a shitty bar that had people that were trying to dress like they were in Guns N' Roses in the front part of the bar. You know what I mean? That's the one time I've gone to Hollywood in the whole time that I've lived in L.A.
Oh, my.
So Hollywood is like the Times Square of L.A. Like, it's just a tourist
Yeah, and I mean, even the real
basically.
Hollywood isn't where they make movies and stuff anymore, but it does still kind of suck. But you can go your entire life out here not being involved in any of that stuff, and you know, it's sort of...
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And I'll say this about the people you say about that. Like, yeah, everybody's kind of self-absorbed, but it's kind of nice in a way, because they don't bother you. Like, it's self-absorbed in the fact that you're, like, invisible to other people. So I'm going around with a stupid big old grin on my face. Nobody sees me, and I'm fine with that. You know, it's kind of the way I want to be, because I also, like, I loved the people in Dallas when I went there for WrestleMania, right? The people were absolutely fantastic. But I don't need to get in a conversation with everybody that I like interact with.
That's
anyway.
A Southern thing, though. I hear
it is.
Like,
it is.
And people are more approachable in the South and then on the West Coast, anyway.
That's it. I think approachable is it. I think the best way to describe everybody in Texas was the minute you met them, it felt like you knew them, or it felt like they were talking to you, like they'd known you for a long time. Like, they just take certain liberties with speaking to a stranger that you normally wouldn't. It's not. Not like they're rude, they're like super nice about it. Like, it's like they know you in a good way. But yeah, like, there was a situation where we had Drew Galloway at our booth at WrestleCon, and he lost his ticket for his car. And, you know, there was a sign saying, like, there was a charge if you lost your ticket, and there was all this stuff. And he was kind of worried. And, like, I went up to the guy, I was literally like, hey, you know who that is? That's Drew Galloway. He is the TNA champion of the world, and I had his car up here right away. And the guy looks at me and goes, yes, sir, I'll go find it right now. Don't you worry about it, man. And he, like, ran off, and I was like, holy crap, that is some I've never seen service like that. You know, like, but then he came back and, like, you know, had to tell me this whole, like, 20-minute story about what happened with the keys and, like, where they were and all this stuff. And I'm like, get out of here. Don't care. Put them in his hand, and then he's got to go. You know, and but, like, that's the one difference is, like, I don't know. Sometimes I'm in kind of a friendly mood, but when I'm in L.A., I think that's the general thing. It's not necessarily a meanness. I don't think everybody's super, you know, I don't think everybody's even all in it for the business. I think there's just a lot of people that live in L.A. because it's an exciting, happening place to be. But, yeah, I think everybody to a certain degree feels like if you're in L.A., your chances of being, like, randomly discovered or making something happen are more likely. So people are kind of more into that. Because, true, could happen, you know, especially if you're, like, a funny person or talented in any way. You know, a door could open for you for any stupid reason when you live in someplace like that.
I think we can all agree, though, that at least that the most ridiculous thing is the rent and the traffic, which in Phoenix, I know for a fact the rent is still pretty cheap, so.
It's not bad.
So there's always a silver lining.
There is always a silver lining. We're getting to the point where we need to take our last break and wrap up here, but it's gone by so smoothly, and I've had such a fun time talking to you, Derek. You're a warm and friendly guy. Are you sure you're not from Texas yourself? But
maybe I'm a little.
But we were talking earlier about Twitter banter issues and all this, and talking about you being a warm, friendly guy. But I think I just got word from the internet. There's a beef I need to maybe check on with you or possibly squash here. I don't know if you mind. Trask Bryant, the big dog, the big boss over at Wrestling With Words, a podcast that I am somewhat a member of, says that he got himself in trouble on Twitter making a joke to you about putting your daughter in Bullet Club gear. Do you remember this at all?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do remember this. I do remember. And I remember he was very nice about it, honestly. Like, I kind of got mad because it wasn't like a retweeting situation or anything. It's like the internet does. They grab a picture and they use it and they say something funny about it. I think in his situation, it was probably a little bit more hurtful, the comments of people that were commenting on it, to be honest, rather than anything he did. You know, it's weird when you see a picture of your daughter get put on someone's page as kind of a joke poking fun at it, and then you see people say something like, God, what a monster that the father must be, or, you know, like, some of the terrible shit that people can say on the internet. But I will say that he was really awesome about the fact that when he found out I was upset, he actually sent me a message directly and was a pretty stand-up guy about it. And you don't really get that in the day and age. You know, like, normally people are just like, oh, screw that guy. He's, you know, he's mad. Let him be mad. No, he actually reached out and actually apologized to me in a very sincere way. And, I wasn't really mad at him, but I will say that there was a temporary time. You know, it's like anything, man, it's a kid. You take it more personally. I think if it's a picture of me, I don't think I would have given a crap, you know. But when you see a picture of your kid, especially when you're just trying to be like, hey, my daughter really wore a Bull Club shirt. And, you know, then you get all these people trashing you for it. So, but yeah, no, Trask Bryan is awesome.
I think he was probably just trying to make a lighthearted joke, and some other people may have ran with it a little bit further than they needed to, which is exactly how the internet works.
Well, and I mean, that's how the internet is, right? Or it's like, you know, it's kind of like I made a meme of myself making a joke of it, of the fact that I was on the news one day because the house behind me burnt down. And the news interviewed me, and someone sent me a screenshot of myself from the news. So then I took that screenshot, and I changed the thing at the bottom. Instead of it saying, you know, house burns down, family isn't being, you know, it was like they couldn't find the family. They couldn't find the couple that lived there. So it was, like, kind of scary because, you know, hey, their house caught on fire and no one could find them. So they, you know, were on the news. So I just Photoshopped it out, and I put in local man thinks wrestling is real. Worships woman.
Oh, I saw that, actually.
And I posted it on Twitter. Yeah. And you wouldn't believe how far and fast that got. And, like, that situation where I didn't really care. But then I'll admit, it's kind of like a situation with my daughter. When I started reading people's comments about it, I was like, man, you guys really don't know that's a Photoshop? You really think the news put that on there as a headline? Like, come on. You know, but then when you see people being like, oh my God, that guy's a maniac. She needs, you know, someone needs to watch Lana. And like, you see people legitimately like worried for Lana's welfare and shit. You're like, dude, wow, I didn't think that it would blow up like that. You know, so. Yeah, that's totally out of the internet.
I just found that great picture, by the way. Yeah. I just totally stalked you on Twitter and found that picture. Local man thinks wrestling is...
Yes.
Well, all right.
So, by the way, in the news business, that's called a CG. Oh, yeah. You learned something tonight, didn't you?
Yeah, nice.
All right, we'll take one more quick break, and then we'll come back with the kind of final question of the evening.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
All right, Derek. I gave you fair warning. You're the first person who got the new version of the podcast, but I gave you fair warning here. So we're gonna finish this out. I'm gonna ask you the final question, which is: if someone only knew you from kind of your outlet online, and even specifically from the Steel Cage podcast, let's say, or maybe Minutes from the Mayor, what would one thing about you? It could be your day-to-day life. It could be big picture stuff that would shock them or surprise them. What do you think is the biggest shocker or surprise out there?
I think a lot of people are really surprised when they find out that I used to almost weigh 300 pounds as like a freshman in high school.
Oh, jeez.
I don't think people really, yeah. Right, when, especially when you say freshman in high school, you're like, oh, yeah. Crap. You know, but like, yeah, I was really heavy during a period of time in my life. And like, you know, it's, I don't know. I'm to a point now where I'm, don't even really care that much. I try to be healthy. I try to be healthy because I have a 5-year-old daughter. But for the most part, I think that it's kind of helped me develop who I am. I kind of tend to think like really good looking people been really good looking their whole lives tend to, you know, not have to develop, you know, in a lot of cases, much of a personality. I don't think that they are necessarily like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, we see that with wrestlers, you know, some of the most boring wrestlers are like the most amazing looking people, but they don't really have much creatively going on. Meanwhile, you have somebody like Bray Wyatt that's just this, you know, treasure trove of crazy ideas, thoughts, and character. So like I'm grateful that I went through it, but yeah, that was you know, something that took me a long time to kind of get past. And I mean, going back to the whole thing, I think I still have issues of, you know, it's like you grow up being a fat kid, you get picked on a lot, you know, and it's hard to overcome that. It's hard to overcome a lot of that confidence wise to do things like, you know, podcasting and doing public, you know, even the broadcasting stuff I do. But I kind of always found like confidence from wrestling in a way. It's crazy, but like during that period of time I was in high school, like when I discussed that, you know, like 96, 97, I was a freshman, sophomore in high school. And, you know, seeing someone like Stone Cold Steve Austin stand up to his boss, like there was a little tiny Stone Cold Steve Austin in my head, you know, that kind of made me not like just kind of cower down and kind of gave me confidence that I shouldn't have rightfully had, but I did because inside my head, you know, I wasn't going to take any, I wasn't going to take anything from any son of a bitch, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, it helped me become who I am, and wrestling not only gave me confidence through that, but I mean, honestly, there was a narcissistic part of me that wanted to look like a wrestler, you know? So it was always kind of like watching wrestling was always like that carrot on a stick to keep me motivated, you know, like, I used to sometimes watch wrestling and then go directly to like run a mile, you know, that kind of thing, just because I wanted to, you know, emulate and look like these people on TV. So it's, you know, it sure it was kind of narcissistic, but at the same time too, it was, you know, it was trying to better myself. And that's something that you can't say that you get from every television program you watch on TV. You're not given confidence, you're not entertained, and you're not motivated, you know, by sitting around watching Friends and Seinfeld. So I'll say that wrestling was always a really positive, you know, force in my life from that aspect.
Oh, that's super cool.
That is cool, man. I never would have thought of that.
I mean, you are in great shape now. As I mentioned earlier, I was joking, but it's true. You are in fantastic shape now and doing so much awesome stuff. And like you said, you know, you've got the sterling personality. It's blown by having this conversation with you. We'll have to get more guys from the Steel Cage on here, I think, to talk and get to know them as well. But obviously,
they're the best. Not to cut you off, man, but I mean, meeting them and becoming part of their podcast is one of the best things that ever happened to me, because I, you know, I'm a dad. I don't have a lot of friends. You know, it's harder, especially as you get older, to make friends and to kind of fall in line with a group of guys that really quickly became like some of my best friends in the world. It's another thing that I'm really grateful about with wrestling. You know, it's common interests are always going to kind of lead you to people like that, but yeah, you know, I haven't known these guys for very long, yet there's a part of me and them that feels like, you know, we've known each other forever. So, you know, wrestling has not only made me friends with them, but several other people that I would have never known or met. And some of those people have also become like some of my best friends in the whole wide world. So I'm really grateful for everything wrestling
has
done for me.
Yeah, that's it, man. So, yeah, obviously Steel Cage Podcast, Minutes with the Mayor. Was it Sports Cave?
Yeah, Sports Cave with a K. Like the Captain Cape Man with a K.
And PHX. Now, where can people catch PHX? That would probably be the hardest one, I think, to find. Do they put the videos out? And I was going to ask, can you do commentary? Is it live over the house speakers, or is it just on video?
It's just recorded for the video, and it's going to be available on their website on phxwrestling.com. But they have a great website put together. You can see lots of stuff on there. They have some articles keeping you up to date with everything that's going on storyline wise as well.
Okay, and then the obviously, where can everyone find Steel Cage and Minutes with the Mayor and anything else that you want to plug?
Yeah, get us on thesteelcage.com. You can find everything there. You can email me at derek@thesteelcage.com. And yeah, subscribe, check us out. All the podcasts available there. And please, I'm thankful that anybody listens to our shows at all, let alone the amount of people we do. So we're always happy to have some new people checking out the show.
All right, Adrian, you got anything you need to tell the people about today?
No, just follow us on Twitter at Lucha Undead. Follow me at Dilla Boots. And,
all right, well,
that.
I just started, joined up with the Match of the Week Club over at TBN, theplacetobenation.com. We did Mara Fuji versus Okada just recently. We'll do some more interesting stuff. Probably a Dragon Gate match coming up pretty soon. We've also got This Week in Wrestling over on PWO. I'm trying to think what we just viewed. I can't even remember because my brain is so fried from recording too many hours. Either way, go check out. And always, of course, go over to Wrestling with Words and maybe give Trask a pat on the back. Tell him that tell him to maybe think next time before he makes a meme attacking someone's kid. But, you know, he is a good guy either way. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Oh, and of course, Adrian, I almost forgot my closing tagline. Everything in life and the world and all of that, it's all about the three B's, which is good beers, good buds, and good banter. Good night.